Mr. Collins, Real 2. You were just telling me about the rumour that Squadron Leader Mallory had gone into Tunis dressed as an Arab.
Yeah. Whether it was true or not, I couldn't say, of course, but I never saw him from that day to this. But another officer came to where I was at and said your name. He was Captain the Honourable Colin McAndrew from Number 1 Commando. And he took charge of us at this, you know, we had about 12 Algerians dressed in British uniform. Sorry, I beg your pardon. And he used to do patrols into Tunisia, into foothills, you know, looking for what the Arabs were doing, was driving the ship through the lines, taking notes wherever it was. Then they went on back again with the ship, passing the word to the Germans. And of course, there was all sorts of people there. There was the Gobiers. They were very fierce tribesmen, you know. Their idea was slice the ears off. They got paid for his pair of ears they brought back. But I personally had that captured an Arab. He had a German pass. And I was put in charge. I've never told this to anybody. Put in charge of 6 of these Algerians. You might have shoot them. Like a fighter squad. Now I don't know if I'm saying anything wrong or not, but it's true. I was put in charge of a fighter squad to shoot the Arab. We took them up the hills above. It was above an iron ore mine. And they shot them and buried them up there.
Were you in charge of the squad?
Yeah. I was put in charge and that was it.
Where was the squad drawn from? Which unit?
Oh, our unit. We had about 6 or 8 Algerians who the squadron leader Mallory collected and had British Army uniforms on. But there were Algerians and the other squad. They used to do patrols and two of the lines. I beg your pardon. This is no good.
So they were executed for spying for the Germans?
Yeah.
Did you say you captured them?
He was captured. But not by me, of course. Because I was still working the radio back to Algiers.
Who gave you the orders to form the firing squad?
Captain the Honourable Colonel McAndrew.
So he'd captured them, had he?
I don't know whether he captured them or whether I had heard that Mallory had captured them. But it sort of forced a confession out of him. I don't know how far this tape goes, you know. And
how were these Arabs dressed?
Dressed in Arab burnouses and whatnot. The prisoner, you mean?
Mm. Yeah. Did they know they were going to be executed?
This one did, yeah. Well, it must have been obvious, you know. He was in the truck.
Did he try to persuade you not to?
No, never to the word.
So no. He just took it?
Yeah.
How soon... you were there from January to May. 1943 in Tunisia. Did MacAndrew take over halfway through from Mallory?
Well, I think it must have been practically straight away. You see, in January, it may be February, I was up in Sardinia with Mallory, and MacAndrew took over then. Of course, Mallory disappeared, as far as I was concerned. I didn't see him anymore. Whether he got the tourists or not, I couldn't see.
Were you at Sedjanin all the time in Tunisia, or did you move about?
We moved about on bits of patrols, you know. But eventually, when the Africa, you see, we had to move. The Germans made the last try to break through. But just before they surrendered, they made a last push. And they came down the road through Sedjanin. In the meantime, we had gone up higher up in the hills. Therefore, we were then cut off. But it all lasted a couple of days and the Germans were pushed back again. And that was the finish. They went right back until they surrendered, the whole German Africa had surrender. So, myself and Captain Carl MacAndrew moved out from Sedjanin and we followed it right through through Carthage, Kairouan, the Holy City, to Wouba, finished up in Tunis, you know, and then I went all the way back then to Algiers, to ISS 06. I never saw MacAndrew anymore.
What happened to you then?
Well, I went back working in the signal office in ISS 06. That would be about May, wouldn't it? May of 43.
That was the end of the Tunisian campaign.
End of the Tunisian campaign. So I worked in the signal office because we used to work 24 hours a day then, you know. I worked shifts. The next job I went on was the first job to Corsica, September the 13th, 1943. We got on board. This is only four officers and myself.
Who were there?
I can't remember a single name of those four. But we got on board two French destroyers, Le Fantasque and Le Terrible. And on board were members of the Bataillon de Choc. That were the French commandos. We then set off from Algiers and arrived at midnight in Corsica, Ajaccio. But the destroyer went in stern first in case I'd make a quick getaway. And there was a lot of firing went on. But it turned out the firing was the French Mackie, the resistance people. The Germans had started then to move up the island and move out. So I was put in my private house with a radio set and established communications with Algiers. Everything worked all right. Then some Americans came over with a radio station. It was a big one, trailer and all sorts. But they couldn't get contact. So to finish, I was working all the time, sending the general's dispatches to Algiers because the Americans couldn't get contact. And eventually I was sent back to Algiers when I don't know a bit, you know.
How long were you in Corsica for, do you think?
For the first time I was in there just a month, say a month, 5 weeks.
Were these four officers British or French?
British officers. I don't know what they had to do. They just put me in this house with the radio sitting. I got cracking because I used to do all the ciphers, deciphers, and the radio operating. And what they did, I've got no idea.
Couldn't you tell from the kind of messages that you were handling?
No, just a reporting on different things, what Germans moving up and the Italians were there, given up already, you know. And there was nothing else much happening, just the general's report of very lengthy, you know, 3 or 4 pages, which took hours to put to the site, one-time pads. That's what we're using.
But was Andrew Croft with you on that?
Oh, no.
Operation?
No. It was only me and these four officers. Andrew was then in Sidi Farouche, which is beside Algiers, I think, learning lots of people on using rubber boats and dinghies, all that sort of stuff. I came back to Algiers. It was in December. They sent me back, and that's when Andrew was there.
You've said in what you've written here that first operation in Corsica was called Operation Clisso.
That's correct. That was the name for it, Clisso.
And then?
Then, after I was back in Algiers, they sent me back to Corsica, to Basilea, to contact Andrew Croft, and I had to form a signal station, quite a decent station, which would then work. You see, Balaclava had just been established then with Andrew Croft. That was his mission. I had 2 radio operators, 2 cipher clerks, and RAF bloke who was a technician. And we maintained their communications. All day. See, Balaclava did about 50 missions, taking agents into France and Italy, taking the radio sets, bringing them out again, all that sort of stuff. In every mission had to be worked out on the radio with recognition signals, what time, what date, was all transferred to Algiers, to London, back to Paris again, to France again. And sometimes the BBC broadcast, the flowers are falling down or something, which meant we'll be there on the 25th, you know.
Coded messages.
Yeah. And we were rather successful in that. We never lost contact at all. And we did the invasion of Elba, which was for the French. And the French general was De Lattre de Sassini. This is general. But we landed 3 agents and the wider sets on Elba before then. And they passed all the messages and sort of spy the land out, you know. And evidently, general, one night, through the middle of the night, I received a message saying, Vene vite ici la mer et calme. Come quickly, here the sea is calm. Well, I knew who it was there for the key, you know. So I walked me to Croftop and told him, got the message. He said, sure? I said, oh, quite certain. So I had to go to Commander Dixon. Dickinson, who was port commander, Royal Navy. You see, if the Germans had caught these lads, they could have been kidding, you know, been false information. And they had to prove to Commander Dickinson that I was quite certain it was a genuine French operator whom I'd already taught. So they went out after them anyway, and it was quite correct. We got them, picked them up in the rubber boat, got them back on board, and brought them back. And the general, that's where Paddy Davies and Douglas Fairbanks were concerned with that as well. And the general, the latter Tassassini, he said that they'd never gone to action with more knowledge of the land and the enemy and everything. He congratulated them on what they'd done, you know.
Which month would that have been, this landing on Elba?
That was in June.
44. About the time of the capture of Rome.
Would be, because, see, before I went, that's right, June, but it was 17th of June.
And the mission at Bastia was called the Balaclava mission.
That's right.
Getting agents into south of France.
South of France, and north of Italy, and different islands, you know, off of the Italian coast, the French coast. About 50 operations altogether. They always carried out the operation in the, what they call the non-moon period, which is a fortnight every month, you know. And they were successful, to the best of my knowledge, at least 25 or 26 operations. You got the agents ashore, and something like they brought messages back and information back, you know, with them. They used MTBs sometimes, Royal Navy, American PD boats, which is the OSS, and the Italian mass boats. The Italians had surrendered, you know. And there were some mass boats brought into Bastia Harbour. And we used to use some of them as well. We used to go in there. It would say an MTB. So far from the shore. Lower the rubber boat, rubber dinghy. And row ashore. To drop them off, drop people off, see them off safely, roll back in the MP, you know, back to Bastia.
How did you enjoy doing the work at Bastia?
Great. I think it's actually the best work I ever did the whole of the war, Bastia. See, I opened the station in Calvi as well, as the opposite side, you know. And, Andrew mentions me, you know, two or three times in the book. And
this is in his book, A Time for Adventure.
Yeah. I think he says, I enabled him to speak to people in occupied territories, which he'd never been able to before. Because I could make progress with the radio, you know.
Were you concerned with receiving messages from agents in occupied territory and making checks to make sure that they weren't working under German control?
Sometimes. Mainly, they were working. Yes, they were working to us. We were working to London, to Algiers. Then they opened us another station in the south of Italy. Monopoly, they called it. Right down the south of Italy. Just like ISSU 6 Algiers. But it was the headquarters in Italy. Forgotten the name of the place now. But I'm sure it was called Monopoly. And they took over all the Italian business, and they worked the Albania, Greece, Yugoslavia. They worked all of the area from there.
But when you were receiving messages from agents in German-occupied territory,
yeah,
how did you know that they weren't working under German control?
Well, they always used codes at the start of a message, which indicated it was true. If it didn't include it, it was false.
Can you remember what any of those were?
Oh, I can't remember at all. It was simply, sometimes they put a word in, sometimes it was figures, numbers. Everybody had a different word, you know.
Did you have any agents who sent you messages whom you suspected of being under German control?
No. But mainly they didn't. They didn't contact us in Corsica. Mainly they contacted Algiers, London mainly. Then the Italian side, they contacted the Italian ones. We very, very few that we had a contact.
What was Andrew Croft like to work for?
Marvellous man. Marvellous man. He was I don't know what to say. He treated everybody like kings. And the response he got was exactly the same. He was the pinnacle, you know. And he wasn't afraid of anything. He went on the operations himself. On the rubber dinghy rowing ashore. And all that sort of thing. Nobody could dislike Andrew Croft. Perfect gentleman. And a really fine officer.
Any other incidents that happened to you in Corsica that you can recount, please?
No, I don't think so.
You said here on the form that you kindly filled out that in between the two Corsica operations, when you're in Algiers in the autumn of 1943...
Monkey puzzle.
Yes.
That was, from what I understand, I was working in the signal office, working at a station. Monkey puzzle, and they informed me that it was the station that was working for the Italian surrender. For the, you know, making inquiries and passing messages to do with the Italian surrender.
How many were working on this radio link called Monkey Puzzle?
I remember working, it must have been at least three, you know, because you worked in shifts, you see, you couldn't tell, you weren't all on the same set.
When you were working in radio work in countries like Corsica and Algeria, were there any operating difficulties that you had because of local conditions?
No. Matter of fact, The wireless sets we used, B2s, were the wireless sets we used. Were first class wireless sets because they work on crystals. The frequency was a cassette frequency on a crystal box. Plug it in, and it never varied. In other words, like firing a bullet from a gun, it used to cut straight through. Whereas sets which used, didn't use crystals, wavered about, you know? It's in with the sky waving, ground waving, that all sort of thing, but they're perfect. I mean, it worked from Malaya to Ceylon. I mean, the Corsica Bastia was somewhere about 600 miles from Algiers. Malaya to Ceylon must have been, I don't know, 2,000?
Maybe,
at least. Problem, full strength. And we didn't have any marvellous array of aerials slung on the wire up the tree, you know, and got cracking.
Now, how did your work in Corsica the second time finish?
Well, Andrew got us together and he said, you will come with me and some of the other lads, we're going back to Algiers to prepare for this invasion of southern France. So I left there with them and left the other radio lads on in Corsica. But I went back to Algiers with Andrew and we did some parachuting. And they were all set to go on the Operation Anvil, was it? Anvil. And I got the big shock. They said I knew too much. I couldn't go because I'd been in touch with all the codes, all the ciphers, and knew everybody and everything. So they said it was too much of a risk for me to go. So Andrew told me it was okay. And they eventually went to the south of France. And they sent me back to England. No, it didn't. I worked in the signal office again at Algiers. And eventually I got a message with Captain Carson, who couldn't go either because he was ill. He was second in command to Andrew. That we had to fly back to England to meet Andrew, which we did, when we were supposed to be going to Norway. But it didn't happen. And Andrew and I, we did some training, skiing in the mountains and eating pemmican.